You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Our next speaker is Professor John Justin McMurty. His paper has a long title, so I won't read it out. But he, as you know, will challenge us some of the significance of the very concepts which this session is dealing with. Over to you.
Thank you very much. I want to start by saying thank you for having me here, but also to apologize for the very European nature of my title. I'm trying to take three cases from European literature to discuss the social and solidarity economy from within itself, and to point out what I think often happens within the social and solidarity economies. We look at it as a whole that is moving against capitalism or oppression of some type. And I want to look at the SSE internally and say there are different movements within it which we need to think through. And I'm using the example of Prometheus, the stealer of fire from the gods. It brought it to humanity, and therefore, in the myth, liberated. Is the SSE this? Is it the Trojan horse, where the Greeks tricked the Trojans into accepting a horse and slaughtered them all brutally? And this is this the SSE a market wedge? Or is the SSE a Frankenstein, a creation that turned against its master? And in this case, I'm equating that to the state. And what I want to do as I'm talking through is say, what possibilities exist within the SSE for it to achieve, as I will talk about, the Promethean promise that it holds and avoid what I think far too often has happened and is happening, that it becomes a Trojan horse or a Frankenstein that we then have to figure out how to solve the problems it creates. So in my next 12 minutes, I'm going to do four things, I promise. First, talk about the definitional problem briefly. Second, what I want to highlight is the architecture of liberalism at the basis of the social and solidarity economy, I think, in practice, and how that's been imported. Third, talk about different ways of conceptualizing the SSE in the way that some of my colleagues just mentioned for an alternative value system. And fourth, talk about a practical process, because I think as theoreticians, we often talk in very vague and general terms. And I want to talk about a very practical way that we can start to measure, I think, the value that these organizations that we're looking at, the values that they hold. And I want to do that through some very brief case studies. And obviously, my paper is available online for further detail. So in terms of defining the SSE, I don't want to get too much into this, except to say that the definitions that people give of this concept are often rooted in factionalism that we don't pay enough attention to. And what we've done, generally, internationally, is come up with a very vague definition, which is negative. And it is neither state nor private. Even in our document today, that's a term that we all sort of coalesce around. And I want to say that this idea is actually deeply problematic. It obscures the values that we're trying to articulate in a negative definition. And part of what it does is it obscures the fact that practically, the state and the market are involved in every or almost every SSE activity, except perhaps the indigenous activity that's going on. And when we talk about its liberatory potential specifically, we cannot ignore the role that the state or the market play. But we have to get at the values which underlie this idea of neither state nor private. What are we trying to get the state and the market to do that they don't already do? What's different? And as my colleagues have pointed out, value in economics specifically, when you enter into what people think is economic activity, it's the values are imported. This liberalism is imported within the values of economics. So what I'm really trying to do is separate out what is an aspirational value, which we heard this morning, and I think is carried within all of our papers up here today, and the practical values, the on-the-ground questions that the people that we look to be building this, and I consider myself one of them, I'm involved practically in the SSE, how those values are realized in practice. Theorists tend to abstract in the former, create the SSE as a Promethean organization or movement, which I'll talk about in a bit, but practitioners are often concerned with things much more practical and value distinctions on the ground. So the SSE highlights the potential of the of these movements in this theory to be Promethean. But the question is, how are those Promethean values actually spelled out in practice? And have they been internalized or expressed by practitioners? And to me, it's very important to say that the state is a practitioner in the SSE. We heard this morning how involved the state can be in creating the SSE. It's not just organizations, but so too are markets in their use of the language of entrepreneurship, social entrepreneurship, etc. And we want to be able to distinguish these types of activity. And I want to argue here, briefly, and the paper goes far more into the detail of the philosophy of liberalism, that essentially the SSE is haunted by the ghosts of liberalism. And they're not actually ghosts, they're quite real and frightening. But liberalism has established a value framework which largely has been internalized, especially by those practitioners in the state and in organizations and in the market. And as a self-conceptualized alternative, the SSE needs to recognize this and develop, as my colleagues were talking about earlier, a different set of values and build those values in practice. And specifically, when the SSE involves itself in economic activity, how is it creating an alternative? How is it challenging the neoliberal model? Not just theoretically or potentially, but practically. How are these alternatives constructed in ways that we can learn from? And I think we can, actually. But first to philosophy before economics. In terms of economic justice, the values of liberalism, as I said, have been imported into the SSE. And the way that I think they've been imported is in this idea of neither state nor private. And what that actually means is what we're doing is saying, let's get a rule-creating state. I talk about in the paper John Rawls as an exemplar of this. And once those rules are created, then individuals can actualize these values because the rules allow them to do this. And I don't actually think that's a good model for the SSE. I think it's quite dangerous. But it also has created a situation, because liberalism is a very slippery philosophy, that when we talk about things like democracy or community control or entrepreneurship especially, we are not communicating clearly our values as the SSE, because neoliberalism also likes these values but interprets them in a different way through the rule-creating state and the actualizing individual. So you can see this, there's many examples around the world, but you could take the sort of big society idea of David Cameron in the UK as an example, that for him, he's fine with terms of community control, entrepreneurship, democracy. He just means something very different than I think the practitioners in the SSE want to articulate. So how do we actually realize that difference in practice? So as my colleagues have mentioned, and I think it's very important to highlight, there are the two twin problems that I see, the major problems of hierarchy and capitalism. And we have to be able in the SSE to address these in a practical way. And we need to address them because, as I've bolded in this slide, the conditions within which this rule-creating state and the actualizing individual, the conditions within which they operate, determine the likelihood of success. And far too often, we heroize activities which are just activities of resistance, which is great, but they don't have the potential to be transformative, or in my paper, Promethean, unless we start recognizing that there is a larger set of conditions which limit our ability for success. And especially when we're trying to translate into policy or go out into the field and suggest to people that they should assume models like the SSE, we have to be very careful about thinking about what the impacts of that might be on them and how are we preparing them to deal with these larger problems. The SSE, in other words, my second point up there, needs to be very clear in developing an alternative framework within which values and practices happen. And as I'm going to argue later, we need to be thinking about not the theorists imposing those conditions or creating those conditions, but actually looking at what people are doing and us learning from those multivariant practices and enabling that to scale up on a larger and transformative change. The anti-position, it is not simple enough to just say we are anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchical, anti-racist, etc. We have to actually come to the table with articulated alternatives based in practice. So nowhere, thank you. Nowhere is the need for alternatives clearer than economics. I don't want to spend much time on this. I think we all know about the rational, self-interested, market-driven individual. But the way that that is internalized within economic activity and even alternative economics, as was mentioned just recently, just in the previous presentation, about the misunderstanding that economists have about the possibility for alternatives. So I look at development capacities and common pool economic theory in my paper, but just think about, for example, Eleanor Ostrom, who loved Switzerland, for example, and the cooperatives that are happening here. She doesn't articulate in her work the value-based difference. She's making an economic argument that common pool resource or the commons can survive economically. It is not a sufficient theory, in other words, for us to develop the SSE on. It just merely says that you can survive, potentially, as economic agents. We need to get deeper and underneath that economic theory to understand what we're doing. So quickly, in my few remaining minutes, I just want to talk about alternatives. And I want to talk about three potential case studies and then talk about, in my last slide, about a method where I would like to suggest we could do some work to bolster our understanding of alternatives and these alternative values. And basically, what I want to argue here is not that these three examples are exemplars, as I think far too often we do in the SSE. We say, look, here's the perfect example. Let's all follow it. But rather say within these three examples are seeds of what an alternative theory might look like and what we might be able to build alternatives on. So in the case of cooperatives, we have a movement and an international movement that's not often thought about as such. And I would disagree, as was mentioned this morning by Guy Ryder, that the SSE is a movement. I don't think it is a movement yet. And it's not a movement because, unlike the cooperative movement, which is part of it, there aren't clear articulated values that are shared by all. And that in practice, we haven't developed in the SSE, like the cooperative movement has, a replicable practice. Now, there might be problems, as I agree with my colleague to the left, that within certain practices, and the co-op movement is not lily white in terms of its ethical practice. But it is an important model to think about. How is it that they were able to achieve over the last 150 years worldwide practice? That's important. Second, microcredit, which has been rightfully, I think, critiqued, actually holds potential in three areas that I want to talk about. First of all, it focuses in the community as opposed to a national or international scale, which I think is very important. But not only does it do that, but it focuses on collective ownership of capital as opposed to individual ownership of capital. And that's a very, very tricky concept. And it, while it hasn't been realized in practice successfully, I think, it's an important model to be thinking about. And it also starts to raise issues of what is capital and can we broaden ideas of capital beyond just simple monetary capital. The third is a very tricky one, and one which in other papers I've talked about as being a Trojan horse in practice. But I think in potential, again, the movement in alternative energy towards empowered democratic community ownership, and one of the position pieces we were supposed to read before we came here talks about this, state transfer of major pieces of wealth to communities which can be democratically owned and controlled, I think is a very important model to think about. And to see, can we scale this up? And what would that look like? How would we avoid this being a simple transfer of wealth to organizations, capitalist organizations? So, quickly, I want to suggest that there is a method that we can employ, which I've called ethical value added, which asks the questions of organizations themselves to identify their alternative values. And I think if we entered into a research project where this type of research happened, where the people articulate themselves what their values are, we would get some very interesting results. And I just have up there the three questions that form the basis of ethical value added. What social community value does your economic activity aim to create? Self-determined, not someone coming in and imposing it. How do we effectively measure this according to your own understanding of community value? And how do you plan to increase your ethical impact on your community's needs, and how can community participate in that planning? And I think if we ask those questions of organizations of the SSE, we'll have a much richer sense of a value basis on which alternatives can be based. So essentially what I tried to do here and do in the paper, if you're interested, is argue that the SSE is threatened by the importation of liberal values, both in its definition and in its economic practice. I think that we can, as I argue in the paper, develop an alternative value in practice, but it requires rooting out this assumption of liberalism within our practice and our theory. And we can do that by building on the historical practice of some organizations within the SSE and by importing an ethical value-added framework. I encourage you all, if you're interested in the paper, to take down my email address, or if you want to send comments, critical or positive, please do, and thank you again.
Check out our other podcasts, available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. Thank you for listening.